pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, let us extend our thoughts and union as we work to enrich the lives of our residents, and let our deliberations be free of rancor and filled with the concern of others rather than ourselves. Let us plan beyond the obvious that we might protect our neighbor from the unintended consequences of a shallow thought. Let us remember that we are the people's servant, not they ours. Let us proceed in peace. Amen.
Amen. Good morning. I would like to call this morning's adjourned June meeting for July 21st, 2020 at 9 a.m. to order. May I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Sussich.
Present.
Ms. Flowers.
Present.
Mr. Gangler.
Here.
Mr. Giles. Ms. Gilmore.
Here.
Mr. Greider.
Here.
Ms. Hendricks.
Here.
Mr. Kellogg.
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska.
Here.
Ms. Vickers.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. With a quorum being present, may I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Motion by Sussich, seconded by Prochaska. Roll call.
Ms. Sussich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
All eyes. Thank you. Now, next up, I would like to have special recognition for Floyd Dearson and his service to Kendall County. And I've asked Judy Gilmore if you'd say a few things.
Sure. Floyd Arthur Dearson, 78, of Newark, passed suddenly on Friday, May 15th. 2020 at St. Anthony Medical Center in Rockford. Floyd was born in 1941 in Chicago and worked alongside his father as a welder and metal craftsman for Dearson Welding in Newark. While attending the University of Illinois, he was a member of the Navy ROTC. Floyd then transferred to Aurora College to study history. Floyd married Ruth Ann Chapman in 1962 and they raised four sons together. Since Floyd earned his Eagle Scout status, he also encouraged his four sons to be part of the organization, too. Floyd served on the Newark Fire Protection District for 56 years, 39 years as president, on the Kendall County Zoning Board of Appeals for 20 years, and on the KenCom Executive Board for 27 years. Prior to 1946, Newark was a subscription fire department until a tragic loss of life fire outside of town became the catalyst to forming a fire protection district in 1946. That same year, the fire district purchased a 1946 Chevy fire truck that is still functional today and was, in fact, the vehicle that carried Floyd to his final resting place in May. The first fire district president was Floyd's grandfather, Albert Dearson, who served for 10 years. Floyd's dad, Lewis, also served as president, and Floyd served as district president for 39 years. Floyd's sons have also served in the fire district, which contributed to four generations of Dearson men serving on the Newark Fire District in the 74 years since it began. Floyd's love and pride in the district were obvious when he followed in the footsteps of his grandfather and father in serving, and his legacy lives on in his sons that have also served the district. Not only does the tradition of generation after generation continue with the Dearsons, but several other families have two, some even three generations serving as volunteer firefighters and paramedics today. Pride is evident in each district family that has, is, and will continue to serve, as well as the pride they take in the maintenance of trucks and equipment that are cared for on a daily basis.
Awesome. What an amazing legacy of service to Newark, the fire district, and to our county. And is there, are the family members, up front, yeah. I want to present you with a plaque that we have in honor of Floyd Dearson, Newark Fire Protection District, April 1964, May 2020. Kendall County Zoning Board of Appeals from April of 1983 to July of 2003. KenCom Executive Board, October 1993 to May of 2020. In appreciation for 56 years of leadership and dedication to the citizens of the Village of Newark and the County of Kendall, Illinois, presented this July 21st, 2020 by the Kendall County Board. And I'd welcome, if any of you would like to say anything, please feel free to step up. And if not, that's okay too. You good? Okay. Well, I'm going to bring this up. I'm going to put on my mask though to present it to you.
It's true.
This is one that we kind of waited a little bit on it with the with COVID. I know that we wanted to do this a couple of months ago, so thanks for coming out this morning and bearing with us on it. I have one more unscheduled special recognition. I'd like to present this award to our very own Matthew Prochaska. I received a note from Kimberly Hall, who's the Director of Membership at the National Association of Counties, who said that Matthew has earned the Membership Champion of the Year Award from NACO. It says, not only NACO Membership Champion of the Year, Kendall County Board Member Matthew Prochaska, not only was Matt directly involved in recruiting five new members through his service on the United Counties Council of Illinois, he helped the membership team with delinquent member follow-up and has actively encouraged non-member counties in Illinois to register for this year's virtual membership town hall and annual business meeting. Thank you for your NACO membership and support, she says to all of us here in the county. So, Matthew, I know that you put in a ton of hard work with not only NACO, but also with UCCI and with ISACO, and so I think this is well-deserved recognition of all your efforts. So this is actually a pretty nice-looking piece of hardware here, so I'll put this on to give to you as well.
On here it says Membership Champion of the Year, Matthew Prochaska, Kendall County Board, with gratitude for your significant contribution to NACO membership.
Make sure you smile.
Smile with the eyes.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You are welcome to stay, but I understand if you don't want to stick around. It'll
it
be riveting.
An exciting meeting.
I just turned to him and said, this could be hours.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody. Next up, public comment.
It's not the same without the
soda
time and go upstairs and talk to
family. I know, it's not. All right, no public comment? Public hearing. I'd like to open the public hearing for the proposed downstate small business stabilization applications funded by Community Development Block Grant, CDBG funds. This program, the Downstate Small Business Stabilization Program, is a program from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity that is providing grant funds for 60 days of working capital for small businesses during the COVID-19 crisis. The program is supported by Community Development Block Grant Program funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and is designated for assisting Illinois communities to meet their community and economic development needs. Non-essential for-profit private small businesses with 50 or fewer employees are allowed to apply with some exceptions. The Downstate Small Business Stabilization Program requires applications to be submitted through a unit of local government in order to administer the funds to this business, to the businesses. A participation agreement between the county and the business will be put in place to define the partnership. Funds for this program will not need to be repaid provided that businesses remain open for at least 60 days or reopen and retain or re-employ permanent jobs in the next year. Up today, we have Emerson Creek Events. Emerson Creek Events, Inc. is applying for $25,000 for the Downstate Small Business Program. Emerson Creek Events, Inc. is a venue located on 7 acres in Oswego Township. They have been in business since February 1st of 2012. They host weddings, parties, and fundraisers and hold a monthly market. Prior to COVID-19, they had 51 weddings booked from May through the first week in November. Currently, they only have 17 weddings left in 2020, 31 have been rescheduled to 2021, and 3 have been sent refunds. They have significantly reduced staff to only 6 full-time people and 1 part-time person. Normally, they would have an additional 3 full-time staff and 15 part-time staff. The $25,000 grant would go towards salary and benefits for 7 employees, facilities, utilities, and telecommunications. David Demiduke is the owner of Emerson Creek Events. Is he on, or is he here or on the phone?
Might be on the phone.
And hearing none, is there any questions on this item? Any public comment on it? I'd like to close this public hearing.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh,
there's
Mr.
a second.
Keppel.
I have an updated file for you.
Oh, do you have another one here? Thank you. Before I close the public hearing, there is a second applicant. Brentwood Operations LTD is applying for $25,000 for the Downstate Small Business Program. Brentwood Operations Limited has been in operation since February 2013. The company boards and grooms dogs and cats for individuals. The government mandated business closures and travel restrictions resulted in little or no need for public to board their dogs or cats overnight, either short or long term. The business is also seasonal, with a majority of revenue earned during spring break and over the summer. Year-over-year revenues are approximately 75% lower in the month of June, with similar projections for the rest of 2020. The $25,000 grant would go towards wages for 8 part-time employees, rents, utilities, contractor bills, and to earn back the business that has been lost since March. Corey Krickenberg is the Vice President of Brentwood Operations. Is Corey on the phone or here? Any comments on this one? Any public comment? All right. Now I would like to close this public hearing. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved. Second.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Sesich. Roll call.
Ms. Flowers.
Aye.
Mr. Gangler.
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore.
Yes.
Mr. Greider.
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks.
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg.
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska.
Yes.
Ms. Vickers.
Yes.
Ms. Sesich.
Yes.
All ayes. Thank you. Old business. New business. May I have a motion to approve the agreement between Kendall County and the Gateway Foundation?
So moved.
Motion by Gilmore, seconded by Prochaska. Scott, do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, Melissa Moore might be on the phone, but this is just continuing the relationship with the Gateway Foundation as part of the drug court and the improvement courts, and it's the same price as it was previously. We unfortunately got the agreement on the day of law, justice, and legislation, but this is important for the continuing counseling services and all the services the Gateway provides to help us run that program. So it's been a good relationship. There haven't been any problems working with Melissa, so this is a good choice.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on this? Roll call.
Mr. Gangler?
Yep.
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Is everybody?
Yep.
All right. All ayes. Thank you. Motion carries. Elected officials report and other department reports. I'm going to skip over the sheriff for a minute. I saw he walked out. County clerk and recorder?
My revenue report is in the packet. And just a little note on the appointment of election judges. I do have the judges list here if anybody is wanting to look at that. It'll be on display in our office. And the next step is to take it to a judge and he'll approve it. We'll post notice and then we'll get that approved. So there's more to that, but I do have the list if anybody wants to look at it. I just didn't print it for everybody, just to save some paper. Okay. And we are getting ready for the election. Our vote by mail applications have been proofed. I don't have the delivery date yet, the mailing date yet, but they will go out before
April of 2021.
Before August 1st, we are using NBS, who is the same vendor that the assessor uses and that the treasurer used to do their stuff. So we're very confident in what they can do for us, and we've had a really good working relationship with them so far. We're ordering printers and vote by mail envelopes and just trying to get all of our ducks in a row that we can as soon as we can. We'll be selecting vote by mail judges once we have established a space for us to put all of our equipment and whatnot. And I know I will be meeting the first week in August to discuss what we can do with that. The application is online. We have had 475 people so far fill out the applications online. We're getting them in the mail. I don't have the count of the number that we've received through the mail, people that have printed it off and just mailed it in. So they're doing that on their own. Just been very busy trying to keep up with registrations and changes and making sure we're doing everything that the law says we're supposed to do and in the time frame we're supposed to do it. But if anybody has any questions, more than happy to.
Ms. Gilmore?
So, have you had any word from the state about any kind of reimbursement for the extra amount of work
yes.
and money and everything that
yes.
this is causing
yes.
your office?
Yes. We have actually two grants that are specifically for all the changes in the law. One is with the CARES Act. Mm-hmm. We will get reimbursed $150,000 is what our total is. And we'll get reimbursed for postage, and I believe that was about $44,000. So I have to just make sure my paperwork is good and that I submit the grant on time, which shouldn't be a problem. I'm making copies of invoices and whatnot, but just have to make sure. And we are sending out the applications to all registered voters. Just trying to keep my paperwork in order.
Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Gangler?
Debbie, what if somebody sends an application in for you that's not registered? Do you have to reply to them?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or if something's not correct on the application, we do communicate with them to make sure it gets right as fast as possible.
Thanks, Debbie. Mm-hmm. So is the sheriff back? I thought I saw him walk in.
He is.
He's in the one spot I can't see.
Yeah.
No report? Thank you. Treasurer. Good morning.
Good morning. I believe you have my report in your packet. We did see a slight dip in some of our sales tax revenue this past month, so I was going to check to see what we got this month, but I didn't have time to do that this morning, so maybe later today I can send you guys out an email if it looks, you know, maybe we got back on track, maybe we didn't, I'm not quite sure, but I can send that out to you later on today to let you know what we got for July. I had a request to let you guys know how many COVID waivers that we received, and that we received 873 waivers, which is kind of what I figured. I didn't think that we would get more than 1,000, and we didn't. And the total dollar amount of penalties that would have been waived on those was $93,391.59.
Mr. Prochaska.
Most of the people that took those waivers were those residential businesses?
Well, the larger dollar amount obviously were the businesses. Several, like Kohl's and some of those, obviously, all filled out waivers. Developers as well filled out waivers. And then, you know, there were also some residential. I'd say it was probably a pretty even mix.
Any other questions for Jill? Always thank you.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. Clerk of the Court. State's Attorney, Mr. Weiss.
A couple things. One, we were able to do our first jury trial last week, so post-shutdown,
yeah.
I guess is the word. A little bit different. Happy to do jury selection in one room and trial in another, and spacing people out was an interesting development, so we will be continuing to do those as needed. Obviously, those that are in custody will go first, and those that aren't as pressing will go later as we work these through. So we're not doing as many, but that was kind of interesting. We were successful, so that was another good part for us. You guys probably don't care. Second is our 6 months. I wanted to give just an update on our Kendall County Domestic Violence Response Team. We started that in January. I had some numbers through June. We have staffed 72 cases since the start of this in actually the second week in January when we actually started. 16 order of protections were assisted by our office and the team. We were able to get housing for two individuals that needed housing. I don't have all the numbers from Mutual Ground or the Health Department on counseling yet. I'll have those at the end of the year. They're compiling those numbers, and obviously for privacy, we don't share that as much information. But it seems to be going well. We'll know as we get more data as whether how effective it is. Too early to tell. We're still too early, but people have been receptive. People have been reaching out to us, so that's a good thing. And then finally, we are on track with our mental health court. We've been finalizing that policy to get that to the state. The state then has to certify. All problem-solving courts have to be certified by the state now. So we're just finishing up that policy and manual, and that will be out probably by the end of this month to the state, and hopefully by relatively short time. And again, it's by the state's time, but we'll get the certification, get the on-site interview process done, and then we'll be up and running hopefully soon. We've got candidates waiting, and I know the board has already committed some money to that, and again, very appreciative of that. So we're hoping to have it up and running like drug court hopefully by the end of this year. So
that's great. A lot of good updates there. Eric, and I cut you off when you were about to ask cut. Any questions? As far as the jury trials, how is that, what is being done differently? I assume that there's some kind of a,
Yeah, we're not bringing as many jurors in, which can be difficult in certain cases, but we seem to be okay so far. Again, we've only done the one, so
yeah.
Isn't that, we're using the jury assembly room to actually select the jurors. So there's much more room to spread out than in the courtroom. We're obviously social distancing. We've rearranged the courtrooms themselves, staggered the juries as far as where each juror will sit in the jury box. It's not necessarily the jury box anymore. It's a jury area. So it's expanded, so we have that room. There are safeguards that are already in place in the courtroom anyway, with shields for like the court reporter, separating the witness, places for people to stand so we know how far apart we're supposed to be. We're using two podiums, not one, those type of things.
Good.
Different, but everything's different now.
Yeah.
So.
Can I just ask?
Yeah, Ms. Sussish.
Along those lines. Mm-hmm. So who do opposing counsel and you or decide if you want less jurors? Is that how that works?
It's up to the defendant to decide. In a criminal case,
really?
It's only up to the defendant. The state doesn't have a...
Is there any advantage to having less?
You know, the last one we had actually had a six-person jury, as opposed to 12, and some defense attorneys think, hey, it's easier to convince one than it is, when there's only six versus one when there's 12. I haven't done any studies on it. I've tried juries to both. I think they're, depends on the strength of your case. It depends on, how it's presented, those type of things. So this was a six-person jury. Pretty serious charge, home invasion, and the jury found him guilty. So again, I don't know the there's any correlation, but yeah, there's, it's up to the defendant to decide.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions for State's Attorney? All right, thank you. Coroner. Jackie, here on the line. Health Department. Rhianne, welcome.
Thank you.
I would like to welcome our new director, Rhianne Van Gundy, and congratulations on it. And you know, I know you got your work cut out starting in a pandemic.
Not how you always want to start your first job as an executive director, but during a pandemic, let's just keep moving forward with the great work. So, with that in mind, just an update on the cases. We currently have 1,184 cases here in Kendall County. Our recovery right now is 823, so that's just around 70%. And then our deaths have remained here at 23 for the last week and a half, 2 weeks. So, yeah, we're doing good with the deaths. And the cases are increasing. Yesterday it was an additional 14, so we're right in between the 10 to 15 range for the last week, which is comparable to what we're seeing in the state with that range. That's where we were back in May. So the numbers are staying up there, but we're holding tight and staying positive. I also wanted just to thank everybody for, I know Scott, we worked together on that joint release that went out recommending the face coverings and the social distancing. So I just greatly appreciate that. We had a lot of restaurants as well as community partners asking for something from the health department in recommendations for wearing face coverings. And I reached out to Scott and I asked if we could do a joint release, because that way we know that the full county is behind us as being a department of the county. So thank you very much for your review of that and moving that forward. So that's all I have for today. Any questions?
Ms. Essage.
Hi, Rayanne. Thank you. Congratulations on your new role.
Thank you.
I think this is the first time we've seen you actually since you've been in that role. So
she was on our last meeting, but we missed her.
Oh, that's
She was there.
But I wanted to say something. So as my role in Yorkville, as Park and Rec's president, I've had at least on four different occasions somebody commend Ashley on your staff.
Oh, Ashley Hunt.
She's working with our Parks and Rec department and probably several other departments, but how wonderful she's been to work with and helping them through all of their questions and getting our kids to be able to play baseball and, you know, all of these other things. So I just wanted to publicly say thank you.
Your
staff has been really great, and specifically to Ashley for her help with Yorkville's Parks and Rec. So
thank you. I'll definitely share that. Ashley is with our Environmental Health Unit, and they presented at H&E yesterday, but it's kind of funny. Their role has kind of changed through COVID, where they were, you know, doing the food inspections and going into the restaurants and everything, and since they weren't going out and doing the inspections, they've really turned into that role of promoting the Deccio guidance on the restore and getting everybody back into. So they've played a great role. They're very knowledgeable about all that guidance and have really been contributors here throughout the COVID.
Yeah.
So,
like I said, it was several times that and even in our last meeting where we were all socially distanced in the garage, we had our meeting, and Tim Evans specifically said again, please, you know, if anybody knows Ashley or anybody at the health department, please let them know how wonderful she's been. So
I'll definitely share that.
Sure,
thanks.
Ms. Gilmore.
And Rayanne, yesterday at H&E committee, you shared, and Steve Carretti also shared a lot about how you're reaching out to families that are impacted by COVID, and could you just, you know, share a little bit of that with the board?
Yeah, so throughout this, as we're working with families, because of course we're doing the contact tracing and we are finding out what's happening within their household, how they're struggling, what they need, and so our Environmental Health Unit, when I talk about them kind of shifting directions, they really have done even home visits under safe measures by going up and either hanging a door hanger on there saying, hey, the health department is trying to contact you. They turn it backwards, you know. But because we're not always getting good responses from people as far as just reaching out by phone and or by text, that we've actually went out and physically, which has really produced a great response. But also, they've delivered care packages, and the care packages can be anything from PPE to food, because we do have a small food pantry here at the health department. And so if we know that somebody's struggling, they don't have the mask, they didn't have the gloves, they maybe can't get a hold of any hand sanitizer, they can't get out, and they may have other family members in the house. Delivering those care packages, it's just simply making the phone call, dropping it on the door, turn around, get back into the car, so it's left on their doorstep. We don't have marked vehicles, so it's just like anybody else dropping off, whether it's your Instacart or Shipit or anything like that. It's, you know, it's very dignified to be able to drop those services off to them, and it really makes a big difference in their life, and to be able to, you know, maybe be next to family members because now they have enough masks or they have the gloves and everything to move about their home. So, yeah, thanks, Judy.
And Judy mentioned Steve Carotti. He was promoted as well, right?
He was. So I did a little bit of position development at the health department and moved Steve into my assistant executive director, and then moved Katie Williams into fiscal director. So program administrator, obviously Steve is now promoted into assistant executive director. Operations administrator, my old position, has now been given out to Steve and Katie. Arissa, who is my executive assistant, has taken on some of those roles, and I've kept some. So we were able to eliminate that position, and yeah.
That's a good start.
Everyone's getting settled in and making it through the transition, and we're moving forward. We're excited.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks for coming out today.
I have a question.
Oh, Ms. Hendricks.
Yeah, we got to figure out this hand-raising thing. Have we been able to determine, is there like a commonality to where the cases in Kendall County are coming from? Like, where are people getting infected?
I don't think that there's, we don't have a specific outbreak area, no. It is throughout the county. And anymore, an outbreak, if you want to say an outbreak is at a long-term care facility, it's, you know, one or more cases is an outbreak. So that defeats the purpose of really calling it a true outbreak. But no, there's not really any rhyme or reason. It's everywhere throughout the county, and you can see that just by looking at our numbers. I mean, Oswego is, of course, higher, but the population is higher, so that makes sense. But there's really not any distinct, you know, don't go to this place or don't hang out with this. You can't say that. It's everywhere, and it's not even to say that it's been contracted here in Kendall County with the way people are moving. So
as you do this contact tracing, are you then able to go back to where they likely contracted the virus? Because I guess what I'm getting at is I'd like to be able to warn people about the behavior or activities that they're partaking in that are the likely highest vectors.
Well, you're right, Audra. It all goes back to behavior because it's really, you know, we see now the numbers from 18 to 29 are our highest rate. And it's the behavior, the lack of social distancing, the lack of wearing masks, you know, being in close quarters, opening up bars. You know, it's that age in which we need to really focus on the behavior and having them understand the importance of the behavior. But really, we don't have a specific area. We do put the addresses, of course, into GIS, which helps, you know, our first responders know where exactly all those cases are. But there isn't really hot spots, if that's what you're asking.
No, I was just trying to get to exactly what you were talking about to point out, once again, ad nauseum, please wear masks and social distance. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Andy, Supervisor of Assessments.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I've sent out the disabled persons and disabled vet renewal forms. So I've just got some numbers here for you, because I know you'll ask me, Scott. We currently have 392 disabled veterans who are 70% or greater, so they're tax exempt, and that equates to $30,348,902 in actual EAV that is shifted someplace else. So, but again, so I've got 553 total vets. 392 are 70 plus, so that's about 70%. There's 82 that fall in the 50 to 69 range and 79 that fall into the 30 to 49. And I've got about 457 disabled persons. So we sent out a little over 1,000 renewal forms. So those went out 2 weeks ago. So most people are have received those and are turning them back in. So,
thank you for coming prepared with that.
Yes, and, always.
Mr. Kellogg has a
question. I don't mean to catch you off guard. I meant to call you first. But
okay.
On the farmland review, I know you met a second time in
yes.
the presentation.
Yes.
Could you give us a quick update on what happened and what you
learned? Well, so we had a Zoom meeting that included Brenda, what is Brenda's last name? Brenda from the State Farm Bureau, we'll just call her that. And she kind of went through the pros and cons of appealing the numbers that are given to us from the state, and the cons came up the winner. So we just went ahead and approved the numbers that were given to us by the state, because the alternative was, if we don't like, there's six columns. If we don't like the numbers in column six, then we get the numbers in column five, which are roughly five times higher than those in column six. So we're not going to be doing that. So we went ahead and approved what the state had given us. So
I sat in on that call, and it was one of the things that I found interesting is that Kendall is a little bit of a outlier. I don't know if that's the right word, but this law has affected us differently than I think was intended, because downstate, you know, like way downstate, it sounded like they were not paying taxes at all. It was what Brenda was saying, and that's kind of why this came into effect. And
right, essentially, once you get down further than Springfield, you've got average PIs that are in the 80s and 90s, and those tend to be, just to give you an idea, the state calculates between 82 and 130 for productivity index, which is a PI. The higher the number is, the better the soil is. So Kendall is a 121 average PI, so we're kind of toward the higher end, whereas many of the areas south of Springfield are 89, 90, 92. So the way that the formula was working is if you just put 10% across the board on all of the PIs, regardless of low to high, what started out as a 2-to-1 ratio, meaning that those that were good soils were paying, poor soils were basically half of what good soils were, got to be somewhere in a 30-to-40-to-1 range. So it was way, way out of whack. So what they did in 2015 is they tried to and I know I explained this before, but we'll kind of go through it again. They are taking 10% of the median PI, which is a 111, and adding that figure to all the PIs regardless. So instead of going up the 10%, you're going up an actual dollar figure. So I think it was somewhere around $32 was what all PIs went up. So if you're a lower end, your percentage is a higher increase than if you're at the higher end.
Mr. Kellogg.
I spoke to a number of the committee members after the meeting. You know, mm-hmm. none of them are excited about what's going on.
Right.
The alternative that was presented, and then in Nebraska, apparently, they've reverted back to an old system, and people are paying taxes of up to $180, $200 an acre, which is...
Right, because they've gone back to market value.
Yeah,
they're paying on a market value.
So it's concerning the direction it's heading, but the alternative isn't good, so you know, it's up to the legislatures to fix this eventually. So.
Right, and we know how that goes.
Yeah. So, and you can't really challenge it. A lot of the numbers were government numbers and the formulas that...
Right, you really weren't going to come up with any kind of different numbers, and it would have cost somewhere at least $200,000 to have a soil study done just for the county, and I don't think we really want to spend that kind of money at this point. So, yeah. To get the same answer that we've already got.
When was the last time we did a soil study?
When did they do soils? 2010? I forget who, because I think
when
the state...
They changed the classification of soils around 2010.
Yeah,
and
so
created different levels, and
right.
probably coincides with that.
Right, it's right around the same time that Bulletin 810, which is their newest guidelines, came out. So we were supposed to implement by then. So I think those guidelines came out earlier than that. But
thanks, Andy.
Right,
appreciate it.
Yep.
Standing committee reports, facilities, Mr. Kellogg.
I can make a motion to approve change order number one, price change for additional design and mechanical system for Kendall County Boardroom in the amount of $9,650.
Second.
Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Hendricks. You or Scott or Jim want to talk about this?
Jim, you want to give the quick summary of what this is and what we added?
Yeah, Part of it's due to the conference room that wasn't in the plan originally. They determined, at first they thought we'd have to add new boxes for that for the HVAC system. Then they determined, once we kind of questioned it and they looked at it again, that we could reuse them, but we have to change some of the ductwork around. And that's for the two rooms that are behind the wall that will become part of the boardroom. And then the majority of it is for, with the COVID-19, there were some suggestions. I attended a train indoor air quality seminar. And some of the suggestions were that the cheapest, easiest to implement would be to add MERV 13 filters to the system and to possibly add UV light to the existing system. So we asked them to look into that, and that was incorporated into this change order as well. And I believe Scott can answer this, but I think we're thinking it might go under the CURE funding. So.
It is definitely meets the test of a unplanned, unbudgeted expense. The boardroom project itself is a planned, budgeted expense, but these changes due to COVID-19 are not. So we feel that it's a good fit for the program and we'll be seeking reimbursement.
Thank you. Ms. Hendricks?
When I brought this up at the facilities meeting, I have to say I was really impressed with the response that Director Smiley gave. He got on it right away. I was a little forceful in my concern, and he was really good. He went right out right away and sought more information, attended a webinar, gathered a ton of information, and came up with a really brilliant solution for us that doesn't cost a lot of money. I mean, there was a lot of choices he had to go through, and so I just wanted to take a moment to extend my gratitude for his work and effort in that. Thank you very much. And this goes a long way to just making sure that our building, our employees, and everybody that comes here is as safe as we can possibly make them. Thanks. So thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. And Matthew, did you have a question? Okay. All right, roll call.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
All ayes. Motion carries. Thank you. Highway. Fran, do you want to come up for a minute? And can I get a motion to approve the professional services agreement with H.R. Green for Phase 2 Engineering of Alamein Road Extension, Supplement Number 4, in the amount of $123,551?
Second.
Who made the motion?
Oh,
oh, thank you. Gangler, motion, seconded by Sussich. And Fran, can you take us through why we need to do this?
Right. So this is a supplement to the original Phase 2 Engineering Agreement with H.R. Green. And it is a direct result of the substantial duplicative efforts that we've been working on in Phase 2 that we have already done in Phase 1, but all the additional coordination with IDNR to mitigate and get through the process once again for all of the different species, slipper shell mussels, river red horse carp, Indiana bats, rusty patch bumblebees, and all of those things that for most of them we had commitments on already, but now we're doing them again in Phase 2. And so it is costing us literally six figures to do all these additional efforts.
And this has been done previously?
It has. You know, and it was quite a while ago, you know, six, 8 years ago. But IDNR was not satisfied with many of those old commitments, and so they're making us do it again.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yeah, I was going to question, repeating the process, is that you think it's more of an administrative change at IDNR, or is this a scope of our project is rather large, so they just telling us?
I don't know if I can speak to the reasons why. I mean, it is true this is a very large project, and obviously will have a pretty big impact on the Fox River in that area. But, you know, we kind of thought we were done. Typically in Phase 1, you get through all of that, you get commitments, and you move on. Not so in this case. We're redoing much of the work we've already done.
Have you ever had a project where it was approved in Phase 1 and they came back and said, no, we have to redo that? I mean, you've been doing this for a couple of years.
Yeah, this is kind of new territory for us, yeah.
Any other questions for Fran? Roll call.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
All ayes, motion carries. Thank you.
I have a question for Fran, if I might.
Ms. Hendricks.
I know this isn't your purview. I really do know that. But I've also noticed that when I ask you, we actually get real answers from people. So I'm going to ask you. Going northbound on 47, where they've graded the road down, is probably one of the most dangerous roads I've driven on in quite some time, particularly after it rains. And I was mortified to see the state that they left that road in. If you were a motorcyclist, I'm going to advise you right now, don't ride on it. When are they going to make that safe?
Where they've grounded down and it's the...
Yeah, it's a nightmare. It's missing many, like the markings are all but not there.
He's shrugging. You can't see him. He's shrugging.
So this is in Sugar Grove where they milled and filled Route 47?
They're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's out of our county. It's in a different county on a state highway, so...
Come on, Fran.
Dig it out.
Yeah. That road has been in really bad repair for a long time, and that improvement was long overdue as far as how they scheduled that and actually are achieving the end, you know, getting a new product. Doesn't sound like they used a lot of common sense, but I really can't speak to that.
Well, and... When I've seen some of these projects before, they would do like one lane first and then the next lane. And when I was down there, I think they'd done it all. There wasn't any way to get away.
Yeah, it's literally dangerous, especially for motorcyclists. Like I had to drive it the other day right after the rain, and everyone that we had to haul in, you know, with us and driving it with us was just kind of like absolutely stunned that this was the state they left it in. It's dangerous.
You should call Mr. Wheeler.
Yeah,
I'm sure he'd be happy.
I don't have, sorry, you know, I'd like to give you a real answer, but I don't have one.
Thank you. Law of Justice legislation. Mr. Prochaska, I think.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for the approval of a memorandum of agreement between the Kendall County Emergency Management Agency and the Federal Emergency Management Agency Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, IPAWS, Program Management Office.
Second.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Gilmore.
I would yield to Director Quinchy. He's on the phone.
Oh.
Why are we having to do this?
Roger, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Would you want to talk about this program?
Yes. Number one, this is a renewal of an agreement that we had when Joe Gillespie was the director. The system was never entirely implemented, which we're in the process of doing this right now. Now, what it is, and the other big thing is there's no cost to us. The big thing about IPAWS is it integrates a bunch of other older systems into one format, like the EAS system, which everybody's been annoyed at their television suddenly buzzing or their radio in their car suddenly buzzing and somebody's voice come over telling you that this is just a test of the emergency alert system. That, along with the National Warning System, the Wireless Emergency Alert System, WEA, which is interrupted your cell phone at one time or another, and the NOAA weather radios, which some of you probably have. It brings all of those systems into one through this open system that the federal government supports. As I said, we don't have the facilities yet to be able to make access of those. We're working on it right now. We would hope we would never have to use them, because anytime you're using those systems, it's bad news, unless it's a monthly test that we're required to do to a test stop that's down in Virginia or Washington somewhere that doesn't alert anybody. It's just a test to make sure the system works. Any other questions about it?
Yeah, will this affect the unit that we have in the EOC so that it's operational again, or is that something different?
Well, it's two things. One, and I don't know, this gets a little strange, but in the small room off the EOC, Mr. Chairman, in the center room where the radios are, there's a, and I know where you're going with this, with the AS, there's a console the Commonwealth Edison provided that we would normally use to alert the public in the unusual event of a nuclear disaster of some kind. That's called the EMNet console. It would, IPAWS would be enabled on that, and through Everbridge, which is what the system that we use to page out storm spotters and that that CanCon uses. The device that you're referring to, Mr. Chairman, of the EAS transmitter that interrupts the WSPY radio station, it wouldn't replace that, although it, IPAWS can do EAS warnings. That device that's broken right now really only interrupts the radios, the FM radio station alone. And that's, we can't use IPAWS to do that because there's nobody manning that station after hours. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you. Other questions for Director Bonucci? All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Roll call, please.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussage?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Grader?
Yes. Thank you. Motion carries, all ayes. Admin HR, Ms. Gilmore. Or no, Ms. Flowers, I'm sorry.
I need a motion to approve temporary non-presidential addition to section 6.1.C, maximum vacation accumulation due to COVID-19. And this will first. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Motion by Hendricks.
Second.
Seconded by Sussage.
And this just allows our employees a little extra time to take their vacation time that they weren't able to take this year, so they don't lose out on their vacation time.
Any questions on this?
Is this sort of national?
Ms. Sussage?
Is it national, or is this just state, county?
I think this is something that Mr. Keppel came up for the
county. Right. County. Scott, if you want to just kind of explain it in detail.
In our employee handbook, whatever amount of vacation you accrue in a year, you're allowed to have a bank amount that is 1.5 times the amount you accrue in a year. There were some employees who were unable to or had to cancel vacations, whether it be because of increased workload of COVID-19 or because they have to cancel travel plans. And I brought this to the HR committee because I didn't want, it's a use it or lose it once you get to the cap. We don't pay out, it just goes away. However, if you do leave, we pay out vacation. So what this is, you just allow people until it expires in June of 2021. It'll just essentially give some people some more time to take time off with all the additional stresses, both, you know, health-wise, mental health, physical health of COVID-19. I do want people to be able to take the time off that they've earned. However, they may not have been able to take it because of COVID-19 and the additional work we had. So I asked the committee for this, and also wanted to thank Leslie because she worked on it with me to make sure that it's a one-time thing. This is just a temporary relief so that we can get through a problem.
Does this extend the amount of vacation if somebody does leave during that time that we'd have to pay out that they might not otherwise have had to?
Yeah, there's a possibility that we would have, but they would have also not taken days off while they were deployed. But it does. So it does increase our liability slightly if someone were approved to, let's say, carry an extra week of vacation until the deadline date. I mean, next year they would have a higher cap, so they'd have more on the books.
Leslie, you're so far away, but since Scott mentioned you, is there anything that you want to add about this, or think you should add, or did he cover it okay?
Oh. Okay.
All right, thanks. Ms. Sussage?
Yeah, I was actually, Mr. Keppel answered, I was going to say, is this only for this year, and did it go through legal review, so he answered those.
Okay. I'm sorry, July 1st, or no,
it's
July
a one
1,
time.
2020 is the...
July 1, 2021.
Yeah, July 1.
So it's a one-time thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you have to send in a request as reasons why you needed, that you weren't able to take vacation.
Is it dependent upon whether they have had any days off already, or is it just strictly you get an extra week?
No. It's if you would have lost time.
Okay.
It's not awarding anybody anything they have not earned or, you know, will earn.
Okay.
And also, I liked it to go to next year because there is some uncertainty. There have been some people rolling back and closing again more in different states than Illinois. We've been good in our region with our positivity rate, but there's a chance that we do have to have restrictions put back in place this fall, and I wanted to account for that and not have to come back to the board and ask permission.
Okay.
Other questions on this? Roll call.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Motion carries. All ayes. Thank you. Special committee reports. I don't have it on here, but Matthew, any updates on our
no.
county councils?
Nothing new from NACO as of yet. They had their annual meeting over the weekend, and there is a massive online seminar for anyone that is interested tomorrow morning.
You attended the convention?
I did attend the convention digitally. It was originally supposed to be down in Orange County, Florida, but obviously we decided that would be a good idea to send a bunch of county officials from across the United States.
To Florida.
To Florida. So we canceled that several months ago. In terms of local county organizations, UCCI and ISACO are staying on top of any proposals and changes. ISACO in particular has been talking to the governor's office about CARES Act money and its recent change to the CARES Act program, but we don't anticipate any new major changes or any new major legislation. We do anticipate, though, that the veto session could be lively in the bills that they introduce.
Thank you.
In regards to voting or just?
In general.
Okay. Other business? Chairman's report. Oh, go ahead.
I have an extra, a new thing on census, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Please.
To the board, I emailed out to you this morning the dashboard where you can go in and request signs to be put up. And so you can share that with people to request either a Spanish or an English yard sign to put up. We also have the 4x4 yard signs. And a crew that will go out and put them up. For those addresses, just contact Mira with them, and we will have the guy go out and put them up. We're still in third place in the state. McHenry is 0.7% ahead of us still in second. Monroe's come out of nowhere, and they're at 80% now. So we've got some catching up to do. Neosse is still our tract that is the lowest, but they're up to 60% now, so they were making some gains there. And I got notice from the census that they're going to start enumerating in Oswego on July 30th, so people will start to see the door-to-door people walking around fully identified. They'll have a census bag and a census badge. But just let constituents know and people, the public know that they will be out there. And then they'll be starting everywhere else on August 11th. The best thing you can tell people is if they don't want people knocking on their door repeatedly, fill out their census online or the forms that they've all received by now in the mail.
They will come up to seven times to your door, so you don't ignore them. They're just going to come back.
They're just going to come back.
And as we've all seen by how the CARES money and the CARE money and all that has been distributed, it's all per capita. So if ever there was a reason to respond to the census now, this year definitely proves why it's so important, because it will affect our funding for the next 10 years.
That's right. And the specific example that you mentioned, they looked at the unincorporated population of Kendall County, which the official count is 25,000 residents to calculate the distribution to the county. So that illustrates why it is so important. So thanks for mentioning that, Robin.
Sure. That's it. Thank you.
This brings out the competitive part of me, and I just want to go, like, can we please kick everybody else's butt and fill this form out? Like, I want us to be number one, and I don't know why this brings out the competitive streak in me, but, like, we're in third place, people. Come on.
I like it.
And the only county growing.
Yeah, we're the fastest growing. We still remain the fastest growing county in the state, so it makes sense.
Fill out your census form.
Right. Well, and we know that they've had special censuses in Yorkville and Oswego. I don't know if Plano has done that or not, but so they should be a little bit used to doing it. Montgomery, I think, too. So
yeah, unfortunately not Boulder Hill. So yeah. It's the Oswego and Yorkville are definitely used to it. It's the Boulder Hill and Plano have not, and so this is for a lot of people it could be a new thing to fill out a census. So keep pushing it.
All right. Well, speaking of Plano, I'd like to recognize Alderman Williams. Thanks for coming out and joining our meeting today. I'm asking for a motion to appoint Jamal Williams to the Merit Commission, 5-year term expiring July 2025. Ken Holmes from Oswego Fire District, 3-year term expiring April 2023. Roger Long, Oswego Fire District, 3-year term expiring April 2023.
Second.
Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Prochaska. Thanks for coming out today as well. And roll call, please.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Thank you. All ayes and congratulations.
Thank you.
Public comment.
Todd Millane, Yorkville. Three observations. The first one's for Debbie on the return, the ballot requests that are sent out that get returned. There's a possibility that voters either moved, died, or is no longer in the county for whatever reason. In the past, when we did mailings like that, you did like two, and then if it didn't come back the second time, that was one way to purge the voting rolls. So I didn't know if you had a plan or not to use maybe that return mail to help update your registered rolls. And I don't know how much work that would be, but it might be a good opportunity to use that stamp and that returned letter or whatever to figure out if that voter's still there or not. Just a suggestion. The other one is for Andy, and I think he's already gone, but I had a neighbor who's like 68, and apparently he filled out, or 69, filled out his senior exemption the first year he turned 65. And then didn't do it, and like 3 years have gone by, and he didn't get his senior exemption, and he asked me about that. And so then I talked to our township assessor in Fox Township, and apparently he said it was like a state law or something like that, that if you miss it, you're not able to go back and claim it, even though you were maybe entitled to it. And so I just thought that was a little unfair. And then I start reading about this Madigan investigation, and Mr. Berrios, which was their former assessor in Cook County, and as part of that investigation, there was, I don't know, several instances where folks hadn't taken their senior exemption, and then the assessor was able to grant it. In one case, I believe it was like 4 years back. And it might have been on Jesse Jackson's house, if I remember right from reading that. But I was wondering if, is that something that Andy may have the power to do, or the way Dick explained it to me was that it was a state law, and it was out of his domain or his lane, or he didn't have the power to do anything about it. So I was just wondering, there might be a few other seniors in the county that might be in that same boat, and if there's something they were entitled to, because the neighbor that I talked to indicated to me that since he was 65, he filed it, he was going to be 65 plus the next time around, and he just thought he was going to get it, and then didn't really pay any attention to the tax bill and just paid it. So, and he said at least 2, maybe 3 years went by before he realized it, and then he said he had to fill out that form again and do it each year. So, I don't know, it just was something that just, and then maybe Cook County stuff, I don't know, but it just didn't line up and didn't jive with what I'd been told. So, and then the last one is, and I'll send an email over there too, for Neosse Township, but they're the ones that are kind of behind. that township's fairly rural. My suggestion would be reach out to their supervisor and their road commissioner. They may have some great locations for those 4x4s, and maybe we can get NASA to, come in to get on board and do their thing, fill out those forms without, those census takers actually having to go beat on their door. So, it's just something I think that I've met those township officials over there. They're fairly engaged, and I think if you had asked for a reach out and extend a hand and say, hey, can you help us? And if we have the people to go out there and put those signs in the ground, I'm sure they would know where there's some great locations to encourage the residents of that township to go ahead and go online and fill out that form. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Questions from the press?
No questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any need for executive session? I have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Sesich. Roll call.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sesich?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Mr. Gilmore? Or Mr.
Sorry.
Mrs. Gilmore as well?
What?
Yes.
Sorry. Mr. Grady?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
All eyes, we are adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Next up.